Hello again to all those that are listening out there in the EMS and the regular world. Welcome to another episode of the EMS POD with Chief Randall. And I want to give out a special thanks to one of my brothers, Tim, for creating the original music for that opening you just heard. The only way that I can feel cool and hip at the age of 52 is to have cool and hip people make music for me. So thanks again to my brother, Tim. All right. So this is another month, another episode, and another amazing guest. This guest is amazing for a different reason. This guest is amazing because we're celebrating this person because of the month of March. It's not just the month of March, but should be celebrated every day. But this month, the taping of this show is in March, and we're celebrating Women's History Month. And so this is geared just to remind everyone of the achievements of women throughout the years in our culture, whether it's from science to entertainment, that we have a chance to sit back and reflect on the trailblazing women who lead the way for change. And with that said, I want to introduce to the few people that don't know this amazing woman, Dr. Remley Crowe. Hello, Doc.
Hello. Thanks for that warm welcome. Now I need everybody to lower their expectations just a little.
No, it's a well-deserved intro, and I appreciate you taking out the time out of your crazy schedule to just sit and talk about the importance of this month for women specifically. So just curious, and I'm sure the people that listen are wondering, how do you know this person? So would you like to share the story of how we met?
Well, which version of this story do you want me to share?
This is a family show, so yeah.
No, I remember this day very well, although you know, this day has been quite a few years behind us now.
Thanks for that.
But we met at a National Registry of EMTs item writing meeting when I was studying as the EMS research fellow there. Had the privilege of coming into one of these item writing meetings where experts from across the country in EMS education were called in. And you were one of those experts, but I'll never forget the intros going around the table. So at National Registry, when you're in the item writing meetings, everybody goes around and says who they are, where they're from, what they do, maybe a little fun fact. And so the table goes around, it gets to Chief here, and he says, I'm Douglas Randall. I was teaching education, da 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 da. My name means dark blue, but I don't look like my name. I am sunny and my disposition is sunny. And from that moment on, I was like, oh, we're going to be best friends.
My kids will probably say I'm a little corny, but I just want them to know that my goal is to keep things bright, even though my name doesn't reflect it.
I want you to know that, like, as the researcher, I fact checked that. I looked up Douglas and I said, sure does.
Didn't know that. That's fun. Okay. Well, and we'll get into your research prowess as well. So that sounds good. All right. So, you know, your item writing, right? You're in those meetings, you're with the National Registry, but even prior to that, you know, how did you even get into this business for, you know, young women across the country to even fathom this idea?
That's a good question. And I like to say, I don't think I chose EMS. I do think that EMS chose me. So I got into this space in probably a pretty unique way. I think most people wouldn't call themselves fortunate to have been in a car wreck, but I certainly consider myself fortunate. So I was in business school for undergrad, and I was doing a study abroad year in Mexico. And some friends and I went on a trip, and I was in the backseat of the car, and we were going to Acapulco, and it was raining pretty hard. And unfortunately, we hydroplaned and hit another car. Luckily, none of us were injured. I was wearing my seatbelt. I had the seatbelt mark to show it. And when we got out of the car, you know, a few minutes later, an ambulance shows up and sees that we're not injured, but says, hey, y'all can't stay on the side of the road. We need to take you somewhere. So we get into the ambulance, and I was in love. I was like, what is this? How do I do this? So I got my first ride in an ambulance in the front seat and got, exposed to this and thought, all right, I'm going to figure out how to do this. So I went back and finished my bachelor's, and then I thought about how am I going to get into EMS? Well, I moved back to Mexico City and enrolled in the Mexican Red Cross, which is the big provider of EMS there. And, for 26 million people on a good night, we had about six ambulances out. So it was a really busy system and a really great way to learn. And, I've always been a little bit of a nerd. I know you find that really hard to believe.
Wow.
Always a bit of a book nerd. And so, in addition to volunteering as an EMT, I would volunteer as an instructor. And I started reading the textbooks and realized a lot of the stuff in these textbooks is based on our best guess or based on something we took out of the hospital setting. And so I started to really get this idea that I want to turn EMS into my full-time career, not just my volunteer weekend job. And, maybe research is a space where I can do that. And then, as fortune would have it, the right doors open at the right time. On my vacation, I went to an EMS Today conference that was in Washington, D.C. that year. And I met the executive director of the National Registry of EMTs, who encouraged me to apply for the EMS Research Fellowship. And I did. And then the rest is history. I met you at item writing.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. So you started in this business primarily as a victim of a
I
crash.
was a patient briefly, and I was a very fortunate patient that I didn't require any medical attention, but I was on the other side of the pre-hospital care for sure.
So when you started treating folks in Mexico City, you had a very good perch that you could relate to with those patients because you were once in that position in some of those cases.
Absolutely. It's important to be able to have that perspective of what it's like when you have to call somebody during what can be a very scary time.
That person's biggest emergency, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, good. So you get into the business, you're working with the National Registry, you're doing some research. So was this research thing, like how did that kind of come into fruition? Because most people just go work on an ambulance and then they go home, right? And you had mentioned a little bit about that there was some best guesses, but what said to you, man, I can do this. Like I can really make a difference.
I don't know that it was one topic in particular, but I remember, going through textbooks thinking, wow, like a lot of the studies that are cited here, because of course I'm the nerd that reads the footnotes in the end of the chapter, but I noticed a lot of this is coming from the hospital setting. And not to say that's a bad thing, but you and I both know EMS is unique and we should have our own science. And so I had the idea I wanted to do research. I had no clue how I was going to get out there and do it, right? So initially, I thought maybe my only way to do research is I need to become a physician. And I had actually enrolled in medical school in Mexico City and was set to start medical school when my path changed because I went to that EMS conference and was informed about this really amazing opportunity with the National Registry to do specifically an EMS research fellowship. And that takes you through a public health PhD program. And so right door opens at the right time, and that's the door that I took.
You're going to be Dr. Crow one way or the
Oh, I was going to be some sort of doctor. Little did I know, which is funny because initially when I was studying, early in high school, I was like, oh, I'll never be a doctor. I don't want to go to school for that long. Joke was on me.
there were bigger plans, right?
Apparently.
So you're at National Registry, you're starting the research. Kind of give us a glimpse of how that was for you.
It was interesting. I'll remember my first project was with Kim McKenna, who's a wonderful, wonderful EMS educator,
I
amazing
know Kim
person.
McKenna. Yes.
Yes, who
Awesome.
doesn't, right?
Right.
Yeah, so Kim and I teamed up on a project looking at educator demands and resources, and this was an article that we wrote up together. It was based on some survey research that was conducted, and in fact, a lot of the work that we did at that time at National Registry had to do a survey research of the educator workforce as well as the frontline EMS clinician workforce. So I was very fortunate to get to work on a broad variety of topics. So, from educator resources, my next project, I looked at helicopter EMS. And, if you think that research was an instant success for me, I'll tell you another story. It definitely wasn't. So I prepare my first peer-reviewed manuscript, and it was on helicopter EMS. And I'm very excited. And if you've ever submitted a peer-reviewed manuscript, even if you haven't, I can tell you, you got a lot of screens, a lot of things to click through, a lot of things to check and make sure it's formatted just right. So it takes you a long time to submit. But I get there, I push the button, and I'm so happy because I've submitted my first research project. 14 minutes later, 1-4, I get an email. Thank you, but no thank you. Your research is not wanted for this publication. Okay. But it had, and even then, and it wasn't a form letter, which is what I was hoping, right? Like, oh my goodness. No, I actually had comments about my paper and why we shouldn't accept it. But it was helpful because the feedback, even though it hurt, stung, it took me longer to submit than to get rejected. The feedback was helpful. It said, hey, I think you've got a lot going on for one paper. You might want to consider more focused objectives. What I ultimately did with that project was I pivoted. I said, all right, I split it into two papers and got both of those papers published.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, good, good. And what an introduction, huh? Kind of getting your hand slapped and you had to kind of repurpose what you were doing.
That's kind of how research goes. You build thick skin pretty quickly. We make jokes about reviewer number two all of the time, but you definitely have to be open to feedback and able to take that feedback and pivot. There's a lot of pivoting that happens.
What would you say was your biggest accomplishment, whether it's a research project or what the National Registry did as a result of your time with them?
Wow, that's a tough one. We had so many victories while I was there. I will say the paper that perhaps has gotten the most attention is probably not the one I would have expected, but it's one that I am very proud of. Because it shows sometimes, even though we all know something, having the data and publishing the data is really important. And so one of the papers I worked on was a look at a decade of EMS clinician demographics of newly nationally certified EMS clinicians. And I bet you can guess what we saw in terms of gender and race and ethnicity of those providers. Not a ton of changes in a decade, but not also at the time, not a lot of deliberate focus on this. So we show that, gender composition hasn't really changed. Females are underrepresented, as well as racial and ethnic minorities. And that gets worse as the level of certification increases. So with paramedics being less diverse. But that got actually picked up by U.S. News and World Report, which I would have never imagined.
The
mainstream media would cite something that I wrote. But that project for me is definitely a pride point and one that has continued. So others have picked up where I left off, and there's still continued research in this space.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pivotal piece. It really was. Because I remember talking about it with some other colleagues, and it really gave credence to what people were saying, right? Like, man, I'm sure there's enough representation in EMS that represent the communities that they serve. I'm saying, no, there's not. And so now this research comes out that you're a part of, and it confirms it. So it's very pivotal to this day. And I think communities that are progressive are looking at research like that, and they're saying, we have to match what our citizens look like. Because once you have that familiarity, then you gain way more respect with the people that are there to serve you. So,
and you've done this work as well. You have made it possible for so many to enter a career in EMS or to see themselves as, this might be a place for me, right? And I think what you said about community is really important. We talk about community-based care for the community, from the community. And what better example of that than Freedom House Ambulance? That was real initial community-based, out of hospital care.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. All right. Yeah. Excellent. So you leave your mark with the National Registry. So what was next?
So the cool thing about the National Registry EMS Research Fellowship is it's a 5-year program where, an EMS clinician with a bachelor's or higher goes through the PhD program at The Ohio State University in public health.
Oh,
and you knew it was coming, right?
It was, yeah. Should have been ready.
But at the end of that, at the end of the graduation, you don't owe them any time in return. In fact, they tell you go off and do great things. So it's really a way of giving back to the EMS community. It's truly a vision of Bill Brown to answer that call set forth in the agenda for the future of let's create a cadre of trained EMS researchers and have them do this work, you know, and not just people who have never been in the back of an ambulance doing research. So I think it's a really special vision that has produced a lot of important EMS clinician researchers who are now out there publishing as well. And so at the end of that, I, you know, was looking for an organization that was going to be aligned with, you know, what I hope to accomplish and with my values, and wanted to do this work to improve community health and safety. And I was very fortunate to have come into contact with ESO, which is one of the large EPCR providers in the United States. And, you know, through my interactions with this organization at conferences, I saw what they were doing, and they actually have their mission statement is to improve community health and safety through the power of data. And I said, that's what I want to go do. They didn't have a research department at the time. They didn't know what they were going to do with an epidemiologist, but we saw that our values and visions were aligned, and they said, we're going to do this. And so we've really, you know, made a choose your own adventure path in this space, and we've done a lot of amazing things. I've been there, I'm in my fifth year now. Hard to believe, but yeah, time flies, right?
Yeah, we're having fun for sure.
For sure.
So you get the this is all new, right? Groundbreaking stuff that even the CEO's saying, whew, how are we gonna do this? So how do you integrate yourself into that pretty big company?
Well, first of all, I'm pretty nosy, in case if you didn't already know that. I like to know what's going on. I like to meet people. So a big part of it was getting to know where I was and what was available, and, you know, forming collaborations. So ESO is a very collaborative organization, and because we all share that same mission, it was really easy to get this commitment from others to, you know what, we have all of this amazing data. And the CEO, Chris Dilley, when we initially started, had this vision for, I want to create a data collaborative where, you know, those who are collecting the data get it put into a de-identified database that we're going to use for research and benchmarking. And when I got there was the time when we were really like, we can do this now. So one of the first things that I got to work on was building out a standardized data set that could be used not just internally by ESO, but by researchers from across the nation to answer important questions about state of pre-hospital care delivery. And I think to date, we've had more than 51 publications.
Are you part of this EMS Train Academy that I hear about? Is that something that you participate in?
I have participated in several of the trainings for EMS Training Academy.
Okay. And do you have a research group that you lead now as a result of being at ESA?
Yeah, so we've got a lot of different research groups actually and active collaborations going on. So at any given time, we have more than, you know, 14 external collaborations happening. But one of the coolest things I get to work with is it's a way of training new researchers. So this is a collaboration through the Pre-Hospital Care Research Forum, Dave Page at UCLA. And we bring together these 3-day workshops, right? Where frontline EMS clinicians who are interested in research but maybe intimidated by statistics. I know, you know, I was a person myself, hard to believe, that was like, I can't do math, but okay, math's a barrier. We're going to take that barrier away. We're going to give you a statistician. And we give a clinical methodologist. And in this 3 days, it's like speed dating for research. We open up that ESO data collaborative that I mentioned, and we ask and answer questions in a way that each of the groups has an abstract at the end of that session that's ready to submit to conferences and present like posters. And I know you've had a few poster presentations yourself and know what that experience is like to be able to share the research findings that you worked on.
Yeah, let's talk about that because I think the relationship that we had grew primarily through our meeting at the National Registry, but also we both have a common friend named Dr. Gilmore out of the St. Louis Fire Department. And we talked a little bit more about research. And I looked at research like it was a 100-foot monster initially because it just seems like these are really, really smart people. and I don't know if I could tackle that monster. And between you, Dr. Gilmore, and Dr. Hezadine Smith, out of the fire chief out of Florida, you were really instrumental in me getting that first piece of research completed. And it felt like a massive accomplishment and very doable. So that's something
you should, that's something to be really proud of. I think a lot of people feel that same way about, you know, the 10-headed dragon of research. And there's no way that, you know, oh, I could never possibly do that. And I think that's a lot of imposter syndrome too, talking, and that, you know, it is important for us to remove those barriers, because having frontline clinicians do the research is critical. Who knows that process better? Who knows how to make care better? The people who are living it. And so I'm so glad that you've chosen a path where you volunteer your time at the end of the day to do this research and share it with others.
Yeah, but it can leave a lasting impact. So how does somebody, okay, so there's a man or woman, they're sitting at the fire station or at the EMS station, and they're listening to this and they're going, yeah, this sounds all good. You guys already did it. How do they get into it? Like, what's a path?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think there's any one path, but there's definitely a couple of different ways to get involved. And, you know, first is to be a consumer of peer-reviewed research and know, you know, where can I access it and where can I access it for free? Because a lot of peer-reviewed publications live behind paywalls. And I'll tell you, you shouldn't pay for research articles. If you see one that you want, you know, reach out to somebody who has academic library access, or the authors themselves are very happy to share papers with you. If it's a publication from the ESO Data Collaborative, for us, it's really important to give back to those who collected the data in the first place. And we make that available on the ESO website under data and research. All you have to do is a couple of clicks and we send the full text of that research article, because we want people to be able to read them and look at them with a critical eye. You know, what question did we not answer that we need to answer next? So for me, often reading research is the first step that makes me think of a new research question. Another way to get involved is to come to one of these workshops. We host them twice a year. We're really fortunate to be able to do that. They're held twice a year in Austin. It's free to attend. There's an application process, and the next application will open up here in a few weeks, and it's for a September event. That's a really great way to get involved. But also, you know, perhaps locally, there's often ways to get involved through your medical director. And those who have that academic access often have ways of getting some of the processes in motion that you'll need. And I know that you're familiar with institutional review board. It sounds like this huge barrier, but really finding the right partners can make, you know, those barriers go away. So research is definitely a team sport. I have never published alone, and I don't think I ever will. It really does take a village to make one of these projects happen. But your first step is going out there and consuming the research and then finding a team that you want to work with.
Wow. And to really hit that point, it seems very big. It does take some work, but the results and the outcome mean $1 million. It really does.
It's worth it. Absolutely.
Absolutely worth it. Good. All right. So you've been in EMS, we're going to say, for a while, right?
Yeah, don't date me now. Come on.
I'm not. You're right. But in this time period, especially, and I'm going to say it, as a woman leader, we all do, right? We have ups and downs. Don't you like to share some of those ups and downs in this EMS world and some of the things you've done to overcome those things?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm glad we get to say it, right? We should talk about these things. It's important for us. And I think it's also important for us to think about where we are in EMS history. It might feel like EMS was from a million years ago. I guess if you're like my niece likes to say, oh, you're from the late 1900s. That hurts, right? But yes, EMS was also from the late 1900s.
Jeez.
But you know, so EMS like really came about in the 1960s, 1970s. We have the 1966 white paper and some of these acts that established EMS. But that feels like it was lifetimes ago. But we think about it, okay, it's really not. And I'll tell you a story. I was on a panel with some wonderful women at in a conference in EMS, and it was a panel of women, and we were talking about, well, how do we put this out there? What do we talk about? One of us found this textbook, and it was a 1970 textbook. It's again not that old, right? I'd like to think. And
I
the
agree, it's not that
textbook,
old.
thank you, thank you. Others who disagree, you don't get a comment. That's okay. But this textbook had a chapter, and the chapter was called Ambulance Woman. And the quote in this chapter basically said, female ambulance attendants are employed by some authorities, but obviously the duties which they can perform normally have to be of limited nature. And it went on to talk about how women are best suited for, dealing with children and the elderly and all these things, right? But this was published in a handbook in 1970. So, we think about these stereotypes and the gender biases, and we see like this is a product of what the books were saying at the time, what media, social media, and at the time, social media wasn't really much of a thing, but the general media would say at the time. So for me, it's not that strange to think, okay, yeah, there were some hills we had to climb, right? And
Right.
still are, of course. But for me, I think one of the keys to overcoming some of these obstacles, whether it be regarding titles and positions and having something you say not be heard until somebody else says it, right? A lot of these things, I've learned to be a little bit more bold to get rid of the imposter syndrome and realize I do belong here and I have a voice here and I should use it. And I'll tell you a book that I highly recommend for really anyone in the profession, but especially women, is a book called Ask For It. And it basically puts together this idea of there are gender gaps, but a lot of the gender gaps stem from a male was willing to go and ask for it, but a lot of times as women, we don't ask for it because we've been exposed to gender norms and socializations of, if I just work hard, I'll be rewarded and somebody will notice and do it for me. When really, if you don't ask for it, there's probably not the chance of it happening. And if you do ask for it, the worst that's going to happen is a no, right? So I've learned to be a little bit more bold in how I ask for things and being more transparent with that as well.
If you want it, go for
Yeah, and you deserve to ask for it. It's okay. Like it's not this bad thing of you're being greedy or something. You should ask for it.
okay. Very good. So what's next for you? I mean, you've been doing this for a few years, as we said earlier, and you're catching your stride, so to speak, at ESO. You've won countless awards, well deservingly so. And you really sit atop the perch of EMS research, and it's not just for women, it's for all. And you've been very steady. And I've watched this from the audience, and I've applauded every step of the way. And I'm sure you have folks that have done that for you as well. But now all of us wonder, what's next, Doc?
But you know what? I am one who definitely just opens the door when the right door comes. And I think the exciting things that are happening right now are really around equity research. So, what's next? I'm definitely focused on answering questions around equity and pre-hospital care delivery and getting out of this, let's just keep measuring it and talking about it's awful that there's these inequities and into the space of improvement science, where we can actually identify the root causes and design systems to get us different results. So that's definitely an area that I'm very excited to be focusing more of my time and attention on. And I'm also at a place now where I want to pay it forward. And so I'm taking advantage of opportunities to encourage people to join the dark side of research whenever and wherever possible. But I've been really, really proud and really excited to see a lot of the collaborators I've worked with go on to have presentations at national conferences, win awards at national conferences. And so that's something I also hope to do a lot more of is have more reach by collaborating than I would just by being the principal author on a lot of things.
Very good. Very good. So how can people like get in contact with you? They're interested in research. They're a little nervous about it. They think they may ask dumb questions, and we know they're not dumb questions when it
No,
comes to
they're not.
research, because that's what research is, a bunch of questions.
It is.
So how do they get a hold of you?
Oh, I'm on lots of different ways here. So I do the I've it's not Twitter. I'm on the X at
Thank you very much.
RP Crow. That's my handle. You can email me directly at remley.crow@eso.com, or if we don't want to try to spell remley, research@eso.com also shows up to me. And definitely I am on the adult version of Facebook called LinkedIn, I believe.
Right,
I
right.
do like to receive messages. So please, if you think, hey, I want to talk about EMS research, I think I might want to get into it, definitely don't hesitate to find me on any of those.
So, in closing, in honor of Women's History Month 2024, do you have some inspirational statement for the young women that are pursuing the business of EMS?
I mean that's a bold order, but I have a couple. Is I think definitely three words: ask for it, don't be afraid, and don't turn down your shine. So I think when we are one in a group, it's really tempting to be more quiet, be more timid. But I think when we come into this space and we can be our true authentic selves, we all benefit. So don't turn down yourself for others. Be your true self.
Words to live by for all. So I appreciate that. I thank you for your time. This was pretty easy and pretty fun to do this with you. It was built on friendship and respect. And I think you just are an amazing person. And I appreciate our friendship that we've had over the last blah, blah, blah years.
Thank you for that. And this is a mutual admiration society. I'll take any opportunity I can get to spend some time with you.
Well, thank you for that. Well, folks, I appreciate you listening. Next month is going to be live at FDIC, and we have a couple of cool guests. And no, I'm not telling you, you just have to listen. So get on that FDIC website, get on the social media, and you'll hear me on April the 15th at 5:15 Eastern Daylight Time. So set your calendars. Looking forward to it. Thank you again. And from the EMS pod with Chief Randall, have a fantastic day. Thanks again, Dr. Crow.